Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind. I am Eric Kane, alongside Brent Hubbs. We do it every single Sunday night during Tennessee football season, where we look back at the game that was and look ahead to what's to come. And we couldn't do it without our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. You can pick up the phone today for a free consultation. Give them a call at 423-245-4185 or visit them online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey, you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. All right, we got a fun show coming up here today. We'll take your questions up until 9 o'clock. We'll answer them. We have Matt Ray coming on bottom of the hour to talk a little recruiting and what he saw from the sidelines of Tennessee's game in Charlotte against NC State. VFL former linebacker Omar Gaither, who was in attendance, a Charlotte native, will come onto the show at about 8:15, tell us what he saw from Tennessee's dominant effort. But that's what it was, Brent Hubbs. Tennessee 51-10. Another game, no offensive scores for the opponent. Tennessee's defense was the story in Charlotte at Bank of America.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, I mean, the offense is the offense, and they get a ton of credit all the time about everything. And it always happens in football. The quarterback is always the guy that gets loved on most of the time. But give this defensive group in its entirety its full credit. Give Tim Banks his full credit as well. When you go back and rewatch it, those tackles inside, those defensive tackles inside were dominant in this game. But Eric, you think about where this program was defensively when this staff was assembled and put together, and Banks was the last piece. But you think about where they were from a talent standpoint to where they are now. It's been a pretty amazing makeover. Fast, violent, physical, deep in a lot of spots, and developed, getting better. I mean, you look at it, Jalen Smith looked like he could play out there, you know, when he got pressed into action. I mean, we all wondered, right? And there's nothing about Jackson Moy that says he can't play, or Hobbs. Now, Hobbs and Moy weren't ready to play, and neither was Caleb Herring when they came in their first stint in the game when NC State drove the length of the field before the Will Brooks pick six. So there's a learning lesson there. Caleb Herring gave up the edge, and they kind of gashed him on that side. So there's a learning lesson there. But you just look at the overall depth and where this defense is at. Pretty remarkable. But those tackles, those big old burly grown men, you know, tackles on the interior, those guards at NC State they did not have a peaceful night's sleep after that one, because they got shoved around everywhere.
No, they certainly did not. You know, Ben brings up, kind of what we're talking about right now. He says, I'm in love with watching this team. The ability to be rotating 12 legit guys on the defensive line, if we can keep doing that, there's not many O-lines in the country who can consistently match that pressure. I mean, yeah, we've absolutely kind of talked about that, but to see it like we saw it yesterday, and to see it like you hope to see it in Norman, Oklahoma, and then, of course, throughout the rest of the SEC schedule, it's pretty impressive. And yeah, you highlighted the defensive tackles, who I thought had a really good game. I mean, obviously, Tyree West was a standout in week one against Chattanooga. Dom Bailey, who's technically an edge guy, strong side defensive end, he played well. But I thought Eason had a good game. I thought Amari Thomas had a good game. Omar Norman Lott. Just the guys in the interior just made it all go. And that offensive line certainly, which again brought back four starters. They added to it with a center from Notre Dame. I think they've got a legit NFL prospect at a tackle. No chance for Tennessee's defensive line. And then you saw behind that defensive line, I thought the linebackers, you know, played so well. Keenan Peely had one dumb penalty. I thought Keenan Peely played really well in this game. You mentioned Jalen Smith, who I was going to mention as well, taking advantage of his opportunities from Caleb Perry. Arian Carter looked much more in control this week, and Jeremiah Thielander made a couple of plays as well. Again, it starts up front, and you see it go in the second and third layer of the defense. Will Brooks had that pick six. I thought Jermon McCoy flashed. I mean, it was one drive essentially for NC State, where they picked up three third downs. They went 12 plays, 29 yards, and then after that it was one play to Concepcion, and then they couldn't sniff, you know, really anything else outside of a field goal all game long.
Yeah, I mean, they had I think 13 drives in the game, or 12 drives, and nine of them were for 10 yards or less. It was just, I mean, it was a dominating performance, and you go back to what I guess it was Ben was talking about with the defensive interior. I mean, Amari Thomas and Bryson Easton both played 23 snaps. Then you got 14 snaps out of Norman Lott, 14 out of Moy, 13 out of Hobbs, and 11 out of Elijah Simmons. I mean, you're rotating and you're keeping fresh. Now, they got off the field, which limited the snap count for NC State. But, man, if you can play those guys no more than 25 snaps a game, how fresh are they going to be all season long if you don't have an injury somewhere along the way? It's what Tim Banks has believed all offseason they could do. They could just wear offensive lines out by throwing so many talented bodies at them. And I think that's, you know, what we saw yesterday. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that's going to slow down. And that includes a trip to Norman, Oklahoma in a couple of weeks with a young offensive line that the Sooners have. I know it's going to be on the road, but and there's just a lot to feel very good about with this defensive unit in general, because it starts with what you can do up front, and Tennessee can dominate up front.
Yeah, you mentioned it right there. I was shocked when I saw that Omar Norman Lott played 14 snaps. I felt like he was out there a ton, and he was super productive, and he only played 14 snaps. James Pierce, who, you know, didn't show up a lot on the stat sheet, you know, did some things, disrupted, you know, McCall, made him step up in the pocket and kind of do a bunch of things. He played 29 snaps, the most of any defensive lineman. It felt like Joshua Josephs, who I believe played 19 snaps, thought he was on the field a lot more. But I mean, these guys are flashing. They're being productive, and all these guys are playing. So it feels like they're out there more, but, you know, really in reality, they're so fresh. They're staying under 20 snaps for the most part, which is really, really good. Offensively, I thought Tennessee ran the football really well. Dylan Sampson, no Cam Seldon. So Dylan Sampson got probably a couple more touches than he would have even gotten on a normal case, but, you know, 20 touches or 20 carries. He had 23 touches overall, 169 all-purpose yards. He's a really good back, and, you know, credit the offensive line for run blocking the way it did. Credit those tight ends. Nico was involved in the run game, but, you know, on a day where, and we can talk about it here in a moment, where the passing game was, there were some mistakes out there. Tennessee ran the ball and ran it with some authority.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And again, I think the beautiful part of the Josh Heupel offense is that nobody talks about the run game, but they're always effective running the football, and they do it in different ways. You know, I mean, they got into that against Chattanooga. They got into that power set, you know, where they ran basically a tight end, you know, in the A gap, if you will, and had a lead blocker there. They got into a lot more of the stretch plays against NC State because they're in that 3-3 look. And then all of a sudden they go to the two tight end set, and they fall in love with that because it's so effective, and they just stayed in it. They stayed committed to it. I mean, that's the thing I'll give Joey Halsley and Josh Heupel credit for. NC State made it very clear that they were not going to let you get a lot of one-on-one coverage on the outside and let you just throw it over the top of their head, right? They were just not going to play a bunch of press man. They were going to try to play some split safety and challenge you to be patient. And they were. I mean, it was like, hey, if the box numbers are there, we're just going to keep running it. We'll just play the two tight end sets because we can declare. We can do some things out of it. Then they use the tight ends in the red zone extremely effectively in the passing game. And I thought a lot of patience was shown by Josh Heupel and Joey Halsley because it wasn't about looking for a firework last night. They had the one switch route, big play. But, you know, hey, we're not going to let you do this stuff. Fine. If that's what you're going to take away, we're perfectly content with cramming it down your throat. That's what Tennessee did.
Yeah, what I like about the 12 personnel, I mean, until I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but like until it got to a blowout when they ditched it, I mean, Tennessee, well over half of their offensive plays came out of that 12 personnel. And they've done it a couple of times over 3 years inside the red zone, but I mean, we can count on one hand how many times they've done it. They've wanted to do it, they just haven't had the numbers at tight end. And, you know, that's what Alec Ablin and that's what Joey Halsley and Josh Heupel have said repeatedly. Like, we have the bodies to where we can actually do that now. And we saw it, you know, for the first time, how they actually would incorporate that in a game-like setting. So I don't think Tennessee will be in 12 personnel. Like, that's their new base offense. However, when they go against a three-man front or a stack, or say your offensive line is overwhelmed and you're trying to have some extra protection for your quarterback at Georgia or against Bama or something, this is a card they could play. And they played it pretty effectively. And it's something else these defenses have to prepare for before you see Tennessee. It's just another wrinkle to this offense that now we're seeing in year four.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of versatility to this offense that I don't think people completely appreciate. And I didn't expect them to go to the two tight end sets. I was with Dave Doran, right? I didn't think they were going to live in that all night long. But again, if that's the way NC State wanted to play it, that was Tennessee's counter to that. And they have the ability to have those counters now. And again, you're going to play this week totally different. And you'll play when you go to Oklahoma, you're going to play different because you're not going to play face a three-man front. But what's the common theme, Eric, in all of the offensive stuff that they use, regardless of what the base personnel might be or what their personnel is, what's the common theme in all of it? It's a tight end.
Yeah, tight ends are involved.
Tight end. Yeah. I mean, whether it's two or one, there's a tight end that's always involved because that position is so important to get the defense to declare. So you know what you have when you start motioning people and you get your numbers in the box the way you want it, you know, or you can determine if it's man or zone or different things like that. That's why that tight end position is so valuable to Tennessee. And look, they may go into the next game and it may be Ethan Davis's turn because they may be in a single tight end set and they may be wanting to get, you know, more spread out and play more open than they played last night. That's the versatility that of this offense that to me is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, Michael says, do you think the 12 personnel was more about the 3-3 scheme or was it Tennessee having tight end depth? I think it's a little bit of both. I think that was how they were combating that look.
Sure.
Because that look at times has kind of given Tennessee some issues and this type of style. I don't think that's going to be Tennessee's, you know, base offense moving forward. But again, I think that's another element, another variable to this offense that they can pull out, you know, whenever they want. So certainly, again, as you pointed out, Brent, as Dave Doran pointed out, I did not see that coming. And when I saw them go out there and line up on that play number one, I'm like, oh, well, that's something. And then they just continue to run it and continue to run it. I'm like, man, if I'm Squirrel White, I'm like, I'm not even in this football game right now. And he eventually got a long reception. But Tennessee, again, showing why and showing how good and versatile it is offensively. Hey, when we come back, a former Vol is going to check in. Omar Gaither is going to tell us what he saw. Of course, he lives in Charlotte and a Charlotte native. And he's going to tell us what he saw from a dominant Tennessee performance on the defensive side of the football. That is coming up next as we continue on here on your edition of the Rocky Top Rewind. I do want to tell you about our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey, you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's T and Trial Lawyers. We couldn't get this Rocky Top Rewind show up and running every year without our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, which they specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury, DUI, divorce, alimony, personal injury, such as car wrecks, accidents, over 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm's got a vast amount of trial experience. Practice has been in place for 43 years with this specific partnership since 2012 and also have partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. Primarily practicing in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas, the firm has won multiple awards and have attorneys who are rated as super lawyers in the Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. Get a free consultation by picking up the phone and dialing 423-245-4185. That is 423-245-4185. Or go see him in person at 142 Cherokee Street in Kingsport, Tennessee. Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is T and Trial Lawyers. We'll go back into the Rocky Top Rewind here on this Sunday evening, presented by Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you, T and Trial Lawyers. Tennessee, a 51-10 winner over NC State. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs here on the Rocky Top Rewind. And now we want to bring on a former Vol linebacker that knows a little something about defense himself. His name is Omar Gaither. Omar, appreciate the time, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks
Omar,
so much for
the pride of Myers Park, baby.
Yes, what's going Brent, on? It's good to see you, man. You hadn't aged a bit.
No, my hair's white, brother.
Well, I mean, you know, we all getting it a little bit there.
It works on us. Hey, man, listen, I appreciate you joining us. You're one of my favorites because I love just the way the passion and the effort and the energy you always played with and the way you carried yourself. You have to take a lot of pride in the growth of this defense under Josh Heupel. I mean, there's so much offensive talk, right? But the old defensive guy, you have to take a lot of pride in what you see out of this defense from where it started a few years ago to where they're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, football in general nowadays is all offense, offense, offense. But when you go to a game, like I was at the game the other day, and when you watch on TV, you see that, hey, you know, these guys can play defense as well. I think, what, the last three games, opponents have scored, you know, less than 20 combined points or 15 combined points. So, you know, you don't do that by mistake. I don't care who you're playing. If you can keep people to you know, 3 points or 0 points, that's just a you know, that shows how good that defense really is.
Omar, tell me about the linebacker play. I mean, obviously, you know something about that. You know, Keenan Peely, I thought he looked really good yesterday. I thought Arian Carter, you know, was playing under control. But overall, Jalen Smith, Jeremiah Thielander, I mean, they were flying around making some plays. It's good to see a healthy Keenan Peely because I think he's something that this defense and this team really missed last year.
Yeah. I mean, as of right now, I don't think there's anybody on the defense that has – we're not missing any starters who are healthy. I could be wrong or who are injured. I could be wrong. But, I mean, they look like they've been playing together and they're gelling. And one thing you notice about the defense now is that, you know, when you hit people, they go backwards, right? So, you know, there's been times in the past where we play teams and we go in to make tackles and there's, you know, 2 or 3 yards after contact or, you know, it takes 3 or 4 guys to get them down. But, you know, on this defense and here lately, I don't know if it's just better coaching or better recruits, but it seems now that when people on our defense hit people, they go backwards. And that's always a good sign of a good defense.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of both of that, coaching and a little better of the Jimmys and Joes at this point.
Right. I mean, you can't,
that they've had, you know?
It's still can't make up for that. Yeah, no, you can't make up for that.
You certainly can't. I think it's pretty fascinating. You played in the game as the game was really making a transition.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, in your era, it was starting to go towards some of the spread stuff and some tempo stuff. And there was a little bit of that, you know, and now you're not necessarily an in-the-box linebacker. You got to be able to play all over the field and space. And this defense, it's amazing to me how many players they play, Omar, that they're all rotating. I think that's a win. That's what you want. But as a player, I wonder how challenging that is, knowing you're going to get some limited your opportunities. Maybe are going to be a bit limited. You're not going to play as many snaps as you probably want to play, right? I mean, who wanted to come off the field on defense last night, right? Nobody.
Right. Did. Yeah. I mean, when it's good eating out there, you want to be out there every snap. I understand that.
I think it, don't you think it's kind of challenging though, if you're sitting here and say, okay, you're going to play as a linebacker, you're going to play, you know, 30 to 40 snaps in a game, you know,
yeah.
And you're going to rotate regularly.
It is. And I've been in situations where I played every snap and I've been in situations where I was just on certain packages and I would just go in, you know, a play or two and come out or for certain downs and distances. And it is tough because I mean, much like anything in life, I don't care if you're doing radio, you're playing basketball, you're playing football. It's always good when you get a rhythm, right? And so when you're playing back-to-back-to-back snaps, you can get a rhythm and you just feel more comfortable. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if you have a lot of dogs, you know, you got to use them. So two things. It helps with your depth. So if anything were ever to happen as far as injuries are concerned, you have people who played and who played a lot. And if they need to play more, then they're able to do that. And it also helps in the SEC when you're playing challenging opponents every week. You stay healthy, and you know, you're healthy down the stretch at the end of the year when it counts the most. So the pros and cons to it. As a player, you want to play every down, but, you know, there's a big picture there that sometimes you just don't understand when you're a player. But you do know when you're out there, hey, you know, I may not be out here long, so I need to make sure I can make it happen. So, you know, pros and cons to everything.
Kind of on that note, you got a lot of defensive linemen that are rotating in and playing and they're being effective. As a linebacker, when you're able to run, I mean, you're not always going to be free, but when you got guys not at your ankles, not trying to cut you off when you're taking an angle, when you're able to just go and make some plays, I mean, how much does that make a difference? And I feel like that kind of goes back to a lot of guys are rotating in there up front, but they're all fresh, they're all being effective, and in turn, it allows the linebackers just to go and play free.
Yeah, and So we have D linemen now that, you know, the talent we hadn't had in a long, like when I was playing, we were known for D linemen. I mean, you know, we can name the Hall of Famers, right? The Reggie Whites and the of the world, but you know, we had the Justin Harrells, we had the Paris Harrelses, we had the Jesse Malona. So, you know, we've always had really good D linemen and we've always been deep at D line. So, it's starting to show, and that's the difference in the SEC. If you got guys up front and you can go two or even three deep on defense and even on offense, if you can sub in some guys from time to time that can play and play well, then you're going to win ball games. And I think it's starting to show. I mean, I predicted we would win yesterday. Winning in the fashion that we did was very – I don't want to say surprising, but it was good to see. I mean, it felt like, wow, I mean, this is something of a powerhouse here. And it's legit. You know, you're not just beating up on the Chattanoogas of the world.
Omar, I don't know how you watch a game now. Do you watch a game just as a fan and you're just kind of soaking in all the atmosphere? Or when when the defense is out there, do you get – sort of caught up still and looking at it through players' eyes? And if you do, what do you like about Tim Banks' scheme? What Tennessee's doing schematically on defense? What as a former linebacker, what would you like about it?
Well, so how I watch it, I try to enjoy it, but I do find myself watching it as if I'm watching film and I may be critiquing myself or other players, like, you know, you didn't step this way, you're supposed to be in that gap, you're supposed to do this, that, and the third. But I do try to enjoy it. And I enjoyed it the other day at the game when I was watching. Much easier to see it on TV, but, you know, you try to watch where you can when you're at the game. But I like the scheme. I like the scheme because you don't have to send a lot of pressure to get sacks. And as a linebacker, yes, you want to blitz, you want to have fun doing those kind of things. But when you can rely on your D line to get pressure, you know you don't have to cover all day, or you know that if they do decide to run the ball, that you're not going to have to fight off two and three linemen because the D line has to pay attention to those guys up front, to those big guys. So it's I like the scheme. You got guys flying around playing fast football. Obviously, you had an interception return for a touchdown. I mean, things like that. If we can continue to do these things going forward, make big plays on defense, and not only play well, you know, at the beginning of the game or in the middle of the game, at the end of the game, but play well all throughout the game. I mean, again, when you're holding opponents to zero, that means you went start to finish playing good football. So, I like this game, and obviously it's working. But again, I don't care what the scheme is. You got to have the Jimmys and Joes. You got to have
Yeah, and that was the other thing I was going to ask you. I mean, when you played, I mean, the pride of the defense was all about speed and violence, right? I mean, it was physical, but you guys were getting somewhere in a hurry, right? Because it was a safety being a linebacker or an outside linebacker going to the middle or an outside linebacker going to the edge, those types of things. Does it feel like when you watch, just in general watching, does it feel a little old school Tennessee defense because of the speed you're seeing out there? I know the scheme's different, but from a speed and athleticism, does it feel like what it's supposed to feel like at Tennessee?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It feels old school from the sense that there are really good players out there, and it's not just one guy who's awesome, but you have a any number of guys, you know, four or five guys who you feel like, all right, this guy can play on the next level and contribute. When you talk about speed, I played with guys like Jason Allen. You know, I think he ran like a 4.2 at the combine. And you know, guys who could really run and can get up and down and who would hit you. It's funny when you're an alumni and you watch the games, you see guys that remind you of guys that you played with. That it's always interesting doing that. So yeah, I see a lot of speed. I see the guys flying around hitting, and it's really impressive.
You were talking about how it's fun to blitz, you know, as a linebacker and everything, and they had to do that a lot. I mean, really in the secondary as well, the first couple of years, because they had to make up for that because they weren't getting pressure with four. Right. But if you're not blitzing as a linebacker, you're playing often man-to-man coverage, and that is not fun a lot of times. So it's good to see those guys get after it up front. I do want to flip it over and ask you about what you think about Tennessee's offense. A lot of dynamic playmakers. conversation is going to go to Nico, right? I mean, the quarterback started three games, hadn't gotten into SEC play yet, but three games, three huge wins for Tennessee dating back to the bowl game. What have you seen from Nico that thinks that, you think that he can be a really good player for Tennessee?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think the first thing that sticks out is the size and the athleticism. I mean, I think that, that jumps off the page right away. I knew he could run. I didn't know he was as fast as he was in watching him in person. So that was good to see. He obviously has an arm, and there will be growing pains. There always are, with young quarterbacks, with young players in general. I think the late throw over the middle, the in route, where I felt like he had him early, but then he held it a little too long. Things like that, he'll be able to learn from and he'll be better at. It's always better to learn when you win. So it's much easier to learn when you're winning. So that'll be good. But, I think we have, again, like when I was in school, we have fast tailbacks. I think Samson is, you can break off 40, 50, 60-yard runs from the tailback position. That's always important too. So, they look good. I mean, you can't really find a weak point, I guess you would say, on the offense. So, I am very interested in seeing how we hold up against some of the the better teams, and I do think we'll do fine though.
Hey, Omar, on the screen there, Donovan wants to know your thoughts on the young linebacker number 7, Arian Carter. And I don't know if you paid much attention to him and watched. I don't want you to break down his game because you haven't seen film. But just what do you see just to the naked eye kind of watching him?
What number was he again? I'm sorry.
Number 7.
Number 7. Okay, I thought so. I, to be totally honest, I'll say this. The group in general, as far as the linebackers are concerned, is a good group. I think 7 is he looked fast. He flew around. 11 flew around. He made plays, so it's a good group in general. I don't think I don't have a
sure
specific critique.
Pretty unfair question.
I mean, well, it's just one of those things where you got to see. I don't sure. want to say something and then that be how you think I feel about him. But again, and I am this way. So yes, you you have to play the teams who you beat on your schedule. But I also feel like let's play some other teams that are going to have some other draft picks as well. And then we'll see, how good we really are. So if I'm a leader on this defense, we hadn't done anything yet. Right. What have we done? We've done absolutely nothing. Right. There hasn't been a real challenge for us yet. But we need to be ready when those challenges do come to town. And then we'll really see how we stack up.
Omar, one more thing for me before we let you go, and we do appreciate your time tonight. As a defensive guy, you probably don't like this age of offensive football, right? Because the offense has a lot of advantages.
All the advantages.
Defensively, how much would you hate playing against the Heupel system that's spread as far as it is and plays the numbers game in the box the way they do by using the hash marks to their advantage? How frustrating
tempo
would it
on top
be?
Of that.
Yeah, how frustrating would it be to play against it?
It would never be frustrating as long as I have players on my side who can get the job done. So it's not really what would frustrate me the most is how I don't want to use the word soft, but how cautious you have to be when you are trying to fly around and be vicious and be violent and you're trying to make tackles and For example, the other day when I think it was a running back caught a ball, jumped up, and then we had a penalty for a late hit. I mean, stuff like that, I feel like, it makes you hesitate, and that's the last thing you want to be doing when you're out there playing. But, I mean, to be totally honest with you, I played against spread offenses in the NFL. I played against Tom Brady when he had Randy Moss and they were running, hurry up. They're trying to get a lot of plays. I played against, power eye as far as, when you play the Redskins or the Giants, like Eli Manning, that was an old school offense. So it doesn't really make a difference to me. Whatever you decide to do, as long as I feel like I have the guys with me who can defend it, then, give me your best shot.
Omar out the door. Did you make sure to take care of Austin Price out there on the links the other day? Did you put him in his place?
Well, he called me a sandbagger, but anybody who plays, so okay, so I shot a 40 on the front, right?
Okay.
But then, you know, you at the turn you have some libations, right? And I ended up with a 49 on the back. So, you know, I'm going to blame it on the turn. You know what I mean? I didn't end up so well. But I did beat him. So that's – well, no, I actually retired because of the back was so bad. But that's okay. I had a great time. And it was good seeing everybody. Al Wilson was in town as well. I always love seeing Al, meeting all the ball people over at Quail Hollow and then seeing all the guys at the game as well. When they said Tennessee was coming to Charlotte, I was like, you know, this is great. I think Tennessee came to Charlotte a few years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
2018, yeah.
Yeah, and I was there then too. So, you know, whenever we're in town, I'm going to represent. You know, it's not a lot of orange here, but, you know, whenever I wear mine, it sticks out like a sore thumb. So, you know, ball for life, baby. Ball for life.
When did you pick up the sticks? Were you had always been a golfer?
No, I wish, right? Had I known what I know now, I would have been playing in high school or college, but I didn't start playing until I retired.
Really?
Yes, but I am addicted, like most people tend to get, right? And I'm not bad. I mean, I do all right. So, you know, it's a great game, and it's a good way to get some exercise. It's not like I can go play football, you know what I'm saying? So right. If I want to compete, then there's going to have to be golf, you know?
Well, my man, it's great to see you, and congratulations on a great NFL career, and best of luck to you and everything. Thanks for your time tonight. Appreciate your insight from the defensive side as to what you saw, man. We really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Go Vols. We'll get another win this week, and then we'll get into the thick of things. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a real good season. I may be in Knoxville this year, so if I am, I'll make sure I look you up.
Yeah, please awesome. Do. I'd love to see you, man.
Yes.
All right.
All right, Omar, appreciate it. That is VFL former linebacker, former NFL linebacker as well, Omar Gaither here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Hey, when we come back, we'll answer some of your questions. We'll talk a little bit of Tennessee and NC State, and we'll get Matt Ray on, talk about what he saw from down on the field, and a little recruiting in the North Carolina area, as I don't know if you heard this, but VolQuest blanketed the Tar Heel State on Friday night, so we'll get into that and a whole lot more as we continue on here with the Sunday night edition of the Rocky Top Rewind. Stay tuned. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind here on this Sunday evening. Tennessee, a 51-10 winner over NC State in the 2024 Dukes Mayo Classic. We'll come home this week, take on Kent State. That FanDuel line, it's already up, and it is, I believe it's 47.5 for the Volunteers. That is a big old waste of time, but it's football, and we only get 12 of those in the regular season, so we'll be there, and we'll be having some fun, and we'll tell you all about it, no doubt. Want to get to some questions here, Brent. I've started some throughout the show. You know, Ross chimes in, says, Eric, what did NC State do that seemed to take away from the passing game? I wouldn't say that they took away from the passing game an awful lot. I mean, Nico had two interceptions. One of those he forced. The other one, he had pressure, okay? He still completed 70% of his passes, and he threw for over 200 yards. So certainly it wasn't taken away. It was alive and well. It was just Tennessee had a lot of success on the ground, and Tennessee was set up with a lot of short field positions. And again, we'll go back to where they were in 12 personnel. It kind of changes a little bit of the passing tree, at least from what they've been doing in years past. I think all those had a little combination effect. I mean, I think Nico had a solid game through the air. It's just he wishes he didn't have two interceptions.
Yeah, I think NC State was doing everything they could to take away as much of the vertical stuff as they could. Again, they played some split safety looks and tried to take the middle away and not let them get into rhythm there. And I think a lot of people feel like the one of the best ways and what you have to do is to try to force Josh Heupel to be patient and not get going. And I think Josh Heupel in his tenure at Tennessee is learning some patience, right? Play some field position from time to time. You go back to the A&M game. This game here, they didn't play with a lot of up-tempo. You know, they got numbers games that they liked in the box and with the two tight end sets, and they played off of that. So I think, you know, it was a little bit of we're going to take what you're giving us. And maybe Tennessee didn't dictate as much as a lot of us thought they would dictate. I thought Tennessee would play really fast in this game and try to really tempo NC State. But I think NC State disguises and jumps around so much that they just, once they got in that 12 personnel and it worked, I think they just wanted to stay two tights and then just kind of manage the game that way with a little slower tempo. That's why they didn't play as fast.
Michael says one thing that seemed kind of weird, and maybe it was just the angle of my seat, but it looked like the refs were struggling to spot the football. Both teams seemed to be short a few times in that regard. Did you notice anything in terms of spotting the football
in this game? I thought the one spot on the quarterback run by McCall where he slid feet first, I thought that was a bad spot. I thought NC State got a bad spot on that one. The other one, when he dove forward, I didn't think that was necessarily a bad spot. One of the concerns Tennessee had going into this game, and I've seen a couple people ask about this, Herb's asking about it and some others. One of the concerns Tennessee had going into this game was the officiating crew, because it's a Big Ten crew and they don't play a lot of up-tempo stuff. And I think it's gonna be fascinating to see what Oregon feels like with Big Ten officiating crews, because they don't play a ton of real fast tempo up there. And so because of that, I think Tennessee had some concerns about the ball getting spotted quickly. How fast would it go if they wanted to play tempo and that type of thing? The last Big Ten crew that Tennessee had was the Orange Bowl against Clemson. And if you remember, Josh Heupel got a 15-yard penalty in that game because he lost his mind on an official because they were taking so long to spot the football and to set the football. He wanted to play fast. That was not originally scheduled to be a Big Ten crew. I think the original agreement in that was it was going to be a Big 12 crew, but for whatever reason, based on games and TV time or whatever, I guess the Big 12 didn't feel like they could cover that game, so they ended up with a Big 10 crew, but it was originally supposed to be a Big 12 crew.
Dan wants to know if you were surprised, Brent, about the shovel pass being even more used. You know, we talked about it last week. Maybe something just to put on tape. Don't think they're going to run it as much. They've ran it before in the past, so this isn't completely new. But they ran it a couple times in week one. They ran it three times in week two. It's a play they like, and it's a play that on third and 15, third and long, it makes sense, right? I mean, it's a got ends coming up, trying to throw underneath, as long as you don't have a sitting linebacker. And NC State was scouting it up. They had a sitting linebacker. One time it got blown up. But the other times Tennessee was able to block that one backer, and then it was Samson just going and making some guys miss and going to the markers.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd have told me in August Tennessee was going to run five of those in the first 2 weeks of the season, I would have said no. I didn't think that that would be the case. There's obviously something they like about it. I think they like the feel that Samson has on that play. They certainly caught him in the first one on the third and 14 that Samson converted. They caught him in it pretty well. A really nice block by Javonte Spraggins to not let the guy kind of peeling back get a hold of him moving forward there. You got to catch that right, and they caught that one right. The other one they didn't catch right because the linebacker – they got fooled on that one. That linebacker was up in the gap like he was going to blitz, so they thought they were basically going to get it as a screen, I think. And right at the end, he backed out. And when he did, he was just happened to find himself right where the ball was coming to with Samson and made a really nice play there. So, to answer his question, I'm surprised they've run it as much as they have.
Is Tyree West okay? I think he's going to be fine. Yeah. Josh Heupel said after the game he's going to be fine. What I ask you about a play call, Brent, tight end screen.
I love the little drag to Ethan Davis, didn't you? The little tight end screen to Davis. I love that play.
I mean, it's almost like a do they call that a squirrel route where he essentially goes out and then comes back in and loops around? You got blockers in front. It's almost like a squirrel route combined with a tunnel screen. But it was a good looking play. I thought it looked. I mean, we're seeing some wrinkles here in year four that we haven't seen a lot of times, and I found that so interesting as a football junkie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought that, they've shown a couple of different wrinkles with some stuff they've done with the tight ends. Great play call on the Ketzelman touchdown. I mean, that one just was set up beautifully. You could tell Josh Heupel was really excited about that one.
The play action with the way you were running the football, man, all those backers just sold out, man. Just sold out, and it's just right over the top.
It was really good. And I like some of the stuff they're doing with the tight end. We'll see. I mean, we had Kelsey Pope talk about this in the media setting he had. Guys got to play without the ball because it may not be your night. And that's going to be an interesting thing, I think, for this receiving core moving forward, is you just, and the tight ends as well. Like, Ethan Davis, this, you know, the next time you play, you know, maybe this week or in Oklahoma, it might be better for you. But Tennessee felt most comfortable with Stays and Kettleman, and they got into that look, and it took some things away from the, you know, from the outside receivers. But that's the way it is when you have depth, right? You don't, you know, but you're not playing three receivers with basically no real factor at tight end like you were in year one. It's just a different world that you're in right now, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that 12 personnel took away from Squirrel on the offensive end, the slot receiver, if you will, and then, of course, it took away from Ethan Davis. So Ethan Davis got in there, and he was a part of 12 personnel, but their guys they wanted in 12 personnel was clearly Kitzelman and Stays. Stays was the H, Kitzelman was the Y down there on the field, and that's kind of what they roll with. Ben says, going to the ineligible man down the field, potentially that's just, you know, the crew not being familiar. Maybe it's a Big Ten crew. That was a big point in the football game. It was a really nice scramble drill from Nico, flipped his hips and threw downfield to Kitzelman. That would have been a second touchdown, but got called back because Dane Davis was down the field, according to the officiating crew.
Well, and according to Dane Davis, he was not. And according to the film I rewatched today, he was not. Andre Kirchick was maybe, but I think that's a stretch call at most. I wonder if the official got a little bit lost on where the line of scrimmage was there, because Nico had retreated so far. I mean, he was 12 yards behind the line of scrimmage when he threw it. So if you're just looking and you've lost where the line of scrimmage is, if you're the side judge and you're looking at where Nico threw it from, you're looking at it and go, well, absolutely he's downfield, because he's so far away from the quarterback. But Nico had retreated so far in that play. I think there was a little bit – I think they got a little bit lost on where the line of scrimmage was. Now, in the SEC, I don't know how they call that in the Big Ten. But in the SEC, you can get away with being several yards downfield, because that's not the most common penalty. They let people get away with that, just like they let the offensive tackles get away with lining up off the ball, you know, and then not up on the ball. And that, we saw that called three times. So as a player, you have to, he had to adjust to how the officials were going to call that, because maybe that's a point of emphasis in the Big Ten this year. It's not been a real point of emphasis in the SEC. So that's just one of the things that happens when you get a non-conference crew calling a football game like you do in a bowl game, which is essentially what we had last night.
Yep. And I mean, watch NFL games right now. Jason Kelce, you know, he's on the X answering questions all the time. Of course, he's retired now, but, you know, watch down the line of that line. Look at the tackles, how far they're back. And also, the tackles false start all the time in the NFL game. But they're a little lenient towards that.
They're a lot lenient.
Yeah. Matt Ray's joining the show now. Matt, let's welcome you in here for, Michael's got a question specifically for you. How many of the uncommitted 25s and 26s were at the game on Saturday?
Hey, welcome, Matt. Answer that one. Jump right on in there, buddy.
Come on.
The uncommitted 26s, I think, of note were Brody Keefe and Leo Delaney are the two that I know of that Tennessee's in on the most. Both of those guys took the game in from the NC State recruiting section, whatever that looked like. It wasn't much because, again, neutral site, you can't have contact. But they did both, you know, take the game in. And I think for Brody Keefe, a little bit more probably a learning lesson about Tennessee, opportunity to see them. I don't know how much NC State's really a factor there right now. I think it's a school he's looking at. And then Leo Delaney, I think he really has been impressed with NC State and Tennessee, but there's a lot of Tennessee noise in Leo Delaney's ear, and he made that clear to me yesterday prior to the game, and I think he was really impressed with what he saw last night.
I can tell you this about Brody Keefe, and we'll talk more about it on Trail Tidbits. He was ecstatic talking about Tennessee the other night. I mean, he was like, I talked to that staff probably more than anybody. He said, I love Tennessee probably two or three times. He said, I'll be at the game tomorrow. I'm going to be at the Alabama game, and I'll probably go down there for another game because I just love being in Knoxville. So, like, he's all about Tennessee right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. He was here in the winter. He was here in the spring. He came back one time, you know, just to take in campus and not even to come over for a visit, just to walk through campus with his family, see what it was like, see a little bit of town. I mean, Brody Keefe really likes what he's hearing from the coaching staff in Knoxville, and Kelce Pope has done a really nice job there so far.
So, Matt, you were you guys were on the road seeing a bunch of games. I know Eric talked about seeing Brody Keefe. You made a couple of rounds, a couple of stops before you got to a game. What was your takeaway of kind of Tennessee's blanket of that area of North Carolina, and how much of how much of an inroad have they made because of Pierce? And now they've got the commitment of David Sanders. How hot's Tennessee in that part of the state of North Carolina?
Tennessee's hot in North Carolina right now. I was at North Mecklenburg High School. I got into town a little bit before lunch, and Charles House was on a bye. Went over to see him. And, of course, VFL Daryl Vereen's the head coach there now. I'd been the defensive coordinator for a couple of years prior, but he's the head coach there now. There was a lot of orange at North Mecklenburg High School on Friday. The athletic director stopped us on our way back to the field house. He went to his office, got a Tennessee hoodie out, put it on, wanted a picture with everybody. There were people coming up to Charles House as we were walking through because he had put his hoodie on. Hey, when are you getting me a Tennessee shirt? You know, Vereen's talking to people. But kind of throughout that, you know, you hear Daryl Vereen talking about Faison Brandon, what they've done with David Sanders. There's so many people paying attention to what Tennessee's doing in the state of North Carolina right now. The Vols are hot there. And, you know, I'll go back to, again, my conversation with Leo Delaney yesterday. He talked about Michigan. He talked about Nebraska. He talked about Tennessee. He talked about NC State. But he kept coming back to Tennessee. Just how much he's hearing about them. And it's not just from David Sanders. It's from people around campus at Providence Day. It's from people around town in Charlotte. Tennessee's red hot in North Carolina right now.
Matt, you have a unique view during these football games because we're up in the press box, but you're down there on the field and you're shooting. Had a really good shot of Will Brooks's 85-yard interception return for a touchdown. Anything of note that you picked up on, like from the field? You know, anything from the sideline? I think the turning point in the game was obviously that Brooks interception for a touchdown. But what was it like down there field level when it was a game before Tennessee really kind of put it to him there in the second quarter, third quarter?
And I'll start with the Brooks, you know, pick six. And I think you're right. That was the turning point there. Josh Joseph's made that play happen, in my opinion. Just the even pursuit, not over pursuing right there, making Grayson McCall force that ball over him. And then it ultimately ends up in Will Brooks' hands, and he's able to do the rest. But I thought, again, Tennessee's defensive line early in this game set the tempo. They kind of set back in a little bit of soft coverage early on, and Grayson McCall was able to dink and dunk down the field. But then Omar Norman Lott showed up, and then Omari Thomas showed up, and then Bryson Easton showed up. Josh Josephs was all over. I think that group right now is having a lot of fun. I think they're playing at a really high level. They know that they're capable of playing at a high level. They know that the guy beside them is capable of playing at a high level. I think they're having a lot of fun right now. And I think that showed up the most early on last night. And NC State, outside of one drive there, didn't really have any success running the ball against Tennessee, especially early in that contest. And, you know, I think, again, the linebackers were able to run. They were able to start doing a little bit more in coverage. And you know, Brent, you talked about it in the two-minute drill last night. Just kind of what Tennessee was able to do with taking away KC Concepcion after that first drive, really. I mean, he still had another chunk play later on. But just overall, such an impressive defensive effort. And there's just a different speed to that defense for Tim Banks and a different level of intensity right now than we've seen during Josh Heupel's time here.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, and Matt, I don't know if you could feel it down there. I mean, I couldn't feel it up there, but you kind of watch the game live and then go back and rewatch it. And I think this happens with opponents Tennessee plays sometimes. I think NC State got away from what they wanted to try to do early on. It worked, but then the drive got stalled. And then when Tennessee got the lead, it was almost like they felt like they had to immediately match. Like it was a basketball run was getting ready to happen.
Yep.
And instead of stopping the run by controlling the ball and slowing things down and eating up some clock, they tried to do stuff and get their own chunk plays. And that allowed the defensive line just to get off. I mean, Concepcion had three catches in the first four plays. And listen, I think Tennessee made some adjustments. But I also think NC State just kind of forgot to go back to that well. They started trying to do some stuff that, like, what, just keep doing that until Tennessee. They didn't have the patience that Tennessee had in their offensive play calling, I didn't think.
No, I agree. And I never felt like, maybe a little bit after, I never felt like Grayson McCall was comfortable again inside the pocket after the first Omar Norman Lott sack down there that killed that drive. I never thought that he got back in any kind of comfort level past that. And he looked so poised. He looked like, oh, this might be – you know, the Grayson McCall that people expected him to be. You know, we've been talking about coming over from Coastal Carolina. But after that sack, it never felt like his feet got back under him inside the pocket and he could ever be comfortable again.
Yeah, I mean, he got to playing fast, and he was not comfortable. And the game sped up on him way too much because of the inside pressure that Tennessee had. I mean, Tennessee's defensive tackles just destroyed those guards from NC State all night long.
Yep.
Yep, they did, no doubt. Matt, I know you weren't there. It was actually awesome. Was there to see Davis Sanders, but he did go down. We saw that in the video. Everything good there. Obviously, he did the interview with AP. He went back in the football game. Looks like David Sanders, the five-star plus commit, is A-okay.
Yeah, no, he's doing fine. He still played both ways in the second half of that game, as Providence Day was able to pull away late there. And then he was, you know, he and his family bought a ticket and attended last night, you know, watched Tennessee, and was all smiles. A lot of folks coming over to take pictures with David Sanders. I think he really enjoyed himself last night.
I would love if there's a running clock for this Kent State game. Michael, 100%, man. I mean, Brent, what is it going to be at halftime of this football game?
Well, it ought to be a lot of guys taking pads off.
Yes.
Is what it ought to be. And some of those guys need to be taking pads off before the half. I think this could be the worst team that we've seen come into Neyland Stadium, maybe in my 30 years of covering them. I mean, Tennessee beat Louisiana Monroe, I think 70-7 when Casey Clawson was a quarterback. And I turned to somebody and said, I don't think we'll ever see a team as bad as that team come back into Neyland Stadium. I think I may be wrong, because I think Kent State may be that bad. So then the question becomes, you know, A, how quickly do you get them out of the game? And I mean, by rule, you could play a running clock or 10-minute quarter in the second half if you wanted to. Somehow, Matt, I don't know that Josh Heupel's I don't know that he's going to get too bored playing.
How does that happen? Do both coaches have to agree if you're up by 50? Or?
Yeah, both coaches have to agree. It's the same thing in baseball, right? When you put in the mercy rule or whatever. And Tony Vitello got mad because they lost all those at bats because, you know, he just gave in to the opposing coach wanted to do that rule. So we'll say. My guess is no, they will not shorten the game in the second half. But it's been done a couple times already in the SEC. I think Auburn did it maybe in week one. They wish they hadn't, because they needed some more work based on how they played in week two.
Georgia did it yesterday against Tennessee Tech as well. Yeah.
So we'll see if Tennessee elects to do that. I wouldn't, you know, if it goes the way you want, you're going to be playing a lot of your really young players in the second quarter. So maybe you do that. With a 7:45 start, wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Nope.
late kick, Kent State. You know, we'll learn more about it as the week goes on and everything. But a lot of these questions throughout the show have been asking about Pierce. You know, Pierce getting double teamed, Pierce getting triple teamed. You know, Pierce is opening up things for Joshua Josephs and some of the other guys. And all that may be true a little bit. One kind of out the door here, guys, both of you, Matt, we'll start with you. He's not showing up on the stat sheet, but I thought he affected the game a little bit early on yesterday. But also looking ahead to this week, much like UTC, I bet you James Pierce is not a big factor in this football game. And it kind of stinks for him because, yeah, stat wise, you want to get sacks, you want to get those QB hurries and, you know, all this NFL draft buzz and all that. I mean, it stinks for him, but I mean, Tennessee's not going to play James Pierce an awful lot this Saturday, I would imagine, right?
You want to get that production, right? I mean, if you're a competitor, you want to get that production. But let me ask you this: how much does a sack against UTC and Kent State matter?
No,
I thought he impacted the game early on last night a couple of different times, able to get some different pressures. Over pursued one time, could have had a sack. Over pursued the play just a little bit, but you know, I think for James Pierce, it's going to be about showing up when you have more of those opportunities where, like against Oklahoma with the Jackson Arnold, who's going to drop back and throw the ball. You know, I thought Grayson McCall got the ball out of his hands pretty quickly most of the time last time. I mean, how many times do we see NC State take shots 20 yards down the field? A handful.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be more opportunities for James Pierce on that front. You know, he played less than 15 snaps against UTC. It'd be pretty surprising to me if he needs to play that many against Kent State. So, you know, again, I don't think that, you know, that's going to matter that much. NFL scouts probably aren't going to look at that. But, yeah, I think ultimately he's going to want to produce, you know. But he had a host of scouts watching him through warmups last night. When Rodney Garner's unit came onto the field, you had probably 14, 15 scouts over there from NFL teams watching, you know, that unit go through pregame warmups.
They were eight or nine guys that were trying to scout out of that group. There's a lot of guys. There was a lot of guys to look at for sure.
They were making their way up to like right when kickoff was happening. They were making their way in the press box, and you're right. There was about 14 or 15 scouts for different teams making their way in there. Jack says everybody needs to find that official for taking those points off the board. I thought it was hilarious, guys, when they wiped. So they called the touchdown back for the, you know, Dane Davis being down the field. The points were still on the board. When they finally took the points off, I mean, the boo birds were everywhere. I thought that was so funny. Obviously, Jack thought it was funny, too.
Yeah. One quick thing on James, and I think this is something that James has to be careful with, Matt. And Eric, you can jump in here as well. He's obviously looking for production. He's got to be careful that he doesn't freelance and that it doesn't become all about trying to get to the quarterback, and he gets out of playing within the framework of what needs to be done. I mean, one of the things he did as the season progressed last year, even when at times his numbers dropped, he was so productive because he stayed within the framework of what they wanted him to do. And I think he was trying so hard last night to beat the tackle and to show a little bit. I thought he got a little too far up the field. I wish he'd have gone back to the spin move. The spin move he had in the first quarter was beautiful. He's got to settle in. It's almost like he's playing a little fast because he's pressing so hard. Maybe that's just me, but that's what it feels like when I watch him play a little bit. He's almost playing too fast for what he's trying to get done right now or needs to get done.
Yeah, it's just like with a younger player, right? Don't play above the system. Don't play above yourself. I mean, just play, to the best of your abilities, cool, calm, and collective. Let the game come to you because, I mean, the stats are going to come for a guy like James Pierce. Just stay on the field, stay within the framework of what you want to do for Rodney Garner, and you're going to run into – I mean, James Pierce is so talented, he's going to run into three or four sacks just on his own this year. So, and I think the same could be the case for a veteran like Pierce, like a young guy like Boo Carter.
Yeah, he got the most snaps of any of the defensive linemen last night. Yeah. So he was trying to have a big homecoming and they were good with it. And I thought he affected the game, particularly early. I think he got a little frustrated because he missed a couple that he felt like he could have got, and then I think he's got to really pressing and just kind of got away from a lot of the stuff in his toolbox that he's been working on and just tried to outrun everybody to the quarterback.
Tennessee wins 51-10 for the last three games dating back to the Citrus Bowl. Tennessee's defense has not allowed a touchdown. Dylan Sampson has also rushed for over 100 yards dating back to the Citrus Bowl in all three games since then as well. So Tennessee's rolling right now 2-0. Come back to Neyland Stadium to welcome Kent State for a 7:45 kick that's happening this week. And then it's go time. You're at Norman, Oklahoma for the start of SEC play. And we'll see what this team is all about then. But Tennessee passed test number one on its path to a college football playoff spot, 51-10 over NC State. Big shout out to our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being a presenting sponsor of the Rockies Out Rewind. Again, if you have a need for, you got a problem, they'll find a solution for you. Criminal defense, divorce, personal injury, whatever the case may be, contact our friends at Exterior Home Solutions today. That is 423-245-4185 for a free consultation. Again, 423-245-4185. We'll have a big week coming up over at VolQuest.com. Always the greatest conversations happening on the Journalist Quarters. We'll have podcasts on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 Things from Brent's, the matchup piece, stock report, first glance. We'll have trail tidbits, loads of content coming up over at VolQuest.com this week, and be sure to join us over there. For Matt Ray and Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight on the Rocky Top Rewind.